And now I'm going to say good afternoon to Steve and thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Jackie. Hi.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about the days before emails and texting became the norm.
Who remembers that?
We're talking of the days of the pillar box. Steve, what first sparked your interest in pillar boxes and prompted you to want to start a collection?
Well, Jackie, I mean, they're quite iconic, aren't they?
You know,
everyone who comes to visit the UK thinks about red telephone boxes and red post boxes and red London buses in a lot of cases. And I'd been walking past them like everybody else for years without giving them a second thought. And then it just kind of piqued my interest that I saw one with an unusual royal cipher on it. It was actually Edward VIII, who wasn't ever actually crowned as king. He abdicated before the coronation, but he was king for about 9 months, and a few postboxes were made with his cipher on it. And I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. I've never seen one of those before. And I took a photograph, and then I started to notice a few Victorian ones around the place and, you know, some other odd-looking ones, and took more pictures. And eventually, I ended up in a garden centre in Ely, and they had one for sale. It was about 20 years ago. And I thought, well, that looked nice in the garden, so I bought it, and today we have 167 of them.
Wow. And, Steve, this is a private collection.
It is.
Yeah, you don't run the museum for the National Trust or any other
I mean, there is a National Postal Museum in London, and if you get a chance to go, it's really good. You can go on the Mail Rail ride under London, but they've only got the space to display in London about 6 or 7 postboxes.
Wow.
The rest of them are in deep storage out at Loughton on the Central Line.
Oh, I see.
And you used to be able to make an appointment to go and see that, but even that's stopped now.
Right. And Steve, what does your collection comprise of and where is it situated?
Well, it's in the town of Halstead, so from the Basildon, Billericay area. It's about a 45-minute drive up the other side of Braintree, nice easy roads. It's in a suburban house off the high street, and we're lucky enough to have about 145-foot-long garden.
Wow.
So I've got two sheds in there. The really big stuff that has to be craned in is actually in the front garden because some of them weigh over a ton. And they've had to be delivered with big high-abs. So they're all out the front behind the hedge. And then the smaller stuff comes through to the rear gardens and the sheds. So anything really rare or old, so anything before about 1930, back to our oldest one, which is 1859, we tried to keep those undercover.
Right.
So they're in the two big sheds. And then the majority of the rest of them, so the Elizabeth II, a few of the George VI stuff, that's just out in the rain and the weather, which, of course, they're designed to be, but you do have to repaint them fairly regularly.
So, Steve, if your oldest postbox is 1859, what's the youngest one?
Well, the youngest one is one of the sheet steel boxes manufactured by Royal Mail Engineering Contracts, ROMEC, about 5 years ago. So, yeah, 2006. And it was involved in a minor road traffic accident, taken out of service, and we managed to acquire it. So, yeah, we cover pretty much everything from the first national standard designs from 1859 all the way through to 2006.
Right. I'm curious to know if they still make pillar boxes. Do you know if they do?
They do, yes.
They do.
And some of the listeners will have seen sheet steel pillar boxes, which have been appearing now, because obviously it's cheaper than cast iron. And the way to spot those immediately is that the cipher is on a raised bent piece of metal with the cipher laser cut into it, and it's welded onto the front, spot welded. So when you get up close to them, you think, oh, that's different, and that's a sheet steel one. Whether they'll last the 165 or 180 years that some of ours have lasted is a good question. But they're certainly a lot cheaper than traditional cast iron. The last time that was manufactured was about 6-7 years ago.
Right. Steve, also, there are different coloured pillar boxes. So can you explain what the blue one means?
Right. Well, the standard colour is red, obviously, British Standard 538 red. But what Royal Mail will do for special events like the World, Olympics for a start, and the Cricket World Cup, Pride every year, sometimes for Christmas, and for other things that they deem worthwhile, they will temporarily repaint them.
Ah.
And so blue, I believe, was for the Euros. The Pride ones obviously have the rainbow colours on them. And they tend to keep them like that for about a month or two and then repaint them back to red and take the vinyl graphics off. But they're quite fun.
All right. Only I noticed in your front garden at
I've got a blue one.
Yeah,
that's because we don't just have them from let's say the United Kingdom. The blue one is Guernsey. Guernsey became an independent postal administration in 1969, and they repainted all of their boxes blue in the mid-80s to differentiate them. The Jersey still uses red, but with black collection plates on a lot of them. And then around the world, you'll see them in yellow, in orange in the Czech Republic and Holland. Some places have got green. Ireland, for example, all the Irish boxes are green. And they've got some going back to the Victorian period. If you're very lucky, you can find ones where the cipher of Victoria Regina is still on them. After 1922, most of them were ground off. But there are one or two, in Dublin particularly, and Cork, that have still got the VR crowns on and are painted green.
Okay, Steve, also, another thing that caught my eye in your collection were the stamp vending machines, where if we wanted to post a letter years ago and the post office was closed, we could put our pennies, well then, I suppose, in the vending machine and the stamps would come out. That's so how many of these do you have, and what is the difference between them?
Well, we've got about 25 different types of vending machine here, of which I've got, I'd say, half a dozen at least, possibly a few more, that actually work if you put the old money in them. So you can put a 20 bit in and it'll vend a stamp. I've got one that takes two pennies before it gives you the stamp, because obviously there was no Tupney coin, so they had to ingeniously come up with a way of making it take two pennies. It's all mechanical. There's no electrics in it at all. It's all driven by you pushing the coin in that raises a weight, and then some very clever mechanics in these everyday objects that allows it to say, right, you need to put a second one in before I'm going to give you a stamp. But yeah, we've got them dating. We've actually got the prototype here for the coin-driven ones from 1907, which is a very, very rare piece of engineering. And then we've got a load from the 50s that actually work. And then we've got them right up to really the late 90s, the ones that are driven by electricity, and have got microprocessors in that would sell you a first-class or a second-class stamp. And one or two of those are still to be found where you can find a Crown post office. In the wall of those, you'll see the electric ones, where you put a couple of quid in and it'll give you a book of stamps.
And now, going back years when I first left school, I think, when I worked in an office, you could work in the post room and they franked the mail.
Franking machine.
And I noticed that you have a big box, and on the box it says franked mail only.
That's right,
tell us a little bit about that box. Only it's much bigger than the others, and it's not like a pillar box, is it? Squarish.
Well, firstly, going right back to how you do it, we've also got mechanically driven franking machines where you had to hand crank them and change the dies, and then it has a little counter on it. You had to record on a record card for the post office how many bits of mail you'd franked that day, and then you had to actually carry the machine to the post office for them to sign it off and check it and say, right, you can have another 10,000 letters now. And they're really heavy. They came in leather cases for carrying them down the street.
We're all sitting here nodding our heads that we have done this.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got that. And then we've got, once you'd actually franked a couple of hundred letters, they got zipped up into a canvas bag. And that then has to go into the franked mail box. So that's why they have the big drop-down chute like the old bank vault deposit boxes had.
Right. Steve, how often is the museum open and when do you plan to open it again?
Right. Well, good news for the listeners is it's open this Saturday for the only time in 2021. 10 till 4, admission free. Limited parking along the main road outside the museum. If you want details on where it is and how to find it, then best thing to do is to have a look at the website. Which is www.cvphm, so Cone Valley Postal History Museum, .org.uk, and it's all on there. So because of COVID restrictions, we are kind of limiting, you know, how many people can come through at any one time. So if you want to come, there's a phone number on there. Please do give me a call or an email just to say I'd like to come at whatever time of the day between 10 and 4, and we'll fit you in.
Okay, that's great. Also, as well as the pillar boxes, what you've been telling us about, you have an AA sign collection.
You've been doing your research, haven't you? Yes, we've got the National AA Village Signs Collection here.
Yeah.
So from 1908, The AA, and then later it merged with the Motor Union, became AA and MU, they signposted the whole country, every village, every town, with big 30-inch diameter round signs with the name of the town and then the name of the next two places along the road, and also the distance from London. And when the Second World War broke out in 1939, these were all taken down to stop the Germans from finding it too easy if they invaded. And it's there's about 60 left in situ around the country out of 30,000 that were put up, mostly in really obscure places. But we've got 65 or 66 of them here from all over the country.
Wow.
It's the largest collection of the AA village signs anywhere in the country. So, and it covers everything from Scotland right down to the tip of Cornwall, out to Pembrokeshire, obviously Essex, quite well represented, Suffolk and Norfolk, you know, this sort of East Anglian area. But yeah, we've got signs from all over the country.
So anyone that wants to visit you on Saturday, this is really a trip down memory lane, isn't it?
It most certainly is, yeah. We've got vintage shop stuff and all sorts of other bits and pieces. I've also got, because it's an open day, I've got a chap coming over from Sawbridgeworth who's bringing some vintage railway lamps to display. I think he's got a couple to sell as well.
Oh.
And we do try and get other displays in. We actually had one, you had a gentleman who bought, sounds incredibly boring, doesn't it, a display of drawing pins. But when you can see 400 different types of drawing pins with their original boxes going right back to the Victorian period, you think, wow, I never knew they were so interesting.
Right.
Sadly, you can't make it this year.
No, okay. We are a panel of people, and Angie would like to just have a quick chat.
Yeah, sure.
Hello, Steve. It's lovely to hear from you. Fascinating. I'm fascinated by your drawing pin collection, really.
Well, that's not mine. That's Rob's. But unfortunately, he can't make it this time. But so we've got railway lamps coming this time to augment the stuff that's already here.
I noticed on your website you have, if people can't make it this weekend, have got an actual virtual tour of your museum on YouTube.
That's right. Yeah, there's a whole series I made during lockdown last year because we just couldn't open, obviously. For people to take the virtual tour and see what's here. And then if anyone's actually in the area and they can't make it this Saturday, but they're coming up to Braintree or Halstead or Sudbury, they can always drop me an email. And if we're in, you're more than welcome to come and have a look.
Oh, that's absolutely great, isn't it?
Yeah, that's fabulous. I was listening to you about the different colours, and I remember all the gold post boxes at the 2012 Olympics. Have you got a wish list for a rare item that you really covet?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I'm nearly there. You know, I've got a First National Standard pillar box. So that's now the oldest pillar in the collection. That's 1856. But the wall box we've got is a Second National Standard. That's the 1859. I'd really like a First National Standard, but there are only 10 in the country, and I believe there's only two in private hands. So that might take a bit of getting at. But the other thing where there are more, there's about 150 around the country, is an airmail pillar box. Because from 1933, the airmail service had blue pillar boxes. Especially for receiving the mail that was going to go by post with Imperial Airways. And again, come the war, that service stopped, obviously, and the boxes were all removed. And then post-war, they just got painted red and put on modern housing estates. So there's one on Rain Road in Braintree, which I sort of keep half an eye on, you know, in case an HGV should happen to hit it. You know, I'd be calling the post office saying, can I have it? But so far, it's just sitting there. But there are quite a few of those around the country, and that's really the major thing that we don't have.
Ah, fascinating. Thanks ever so much, Steve.
That's all right, no problem.
And there's Harry. Harry wants to have a quick chat.
Sure.
Hello.
Hi, Harry.
I live in Thurrock, and there's a lot of the pillar boxes there. I've got knitted animals on top of them.
Yeah, knitting bombing is becoming a major thing, isn't it? Started about 2 or 3 years ago, and I first saw it up at Aylesworth in Peterborough. And it's fantastic. Some of the designs are really intricate.
And nobody's pinched them or anything.
Well, what are you going to do if you pinch it? It's too big for a hat, isn't it? All you can do is put it on another pillar box.
I went to the Lake District about 20 years ago, and they've got a Victorian pillar box there.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, there's quite a few Victorian ones in the Lake District. I mean, there are some in the Thurrock area, but they tend to be out in the countryside bit. Yeah. You've really got to look for them.
I went to the London Museum a couple of years ago, And it was really, really interesting. I was surprised how interesting it was. And I didn't want to leave. I wanted to stay there.
Yeah, it's a good day out, absolutely. Mm. There's some really great stuff.
Oh, they have telephone boxes a lot.
Yeah, the telephone boxes, they've got, because of obviously telephones, people now, of course, think it's BT, but it was part of the post office.
It was,
Until 1984, telephones were operated by the post office. It's an important part of their history. So we've got two kiosks here. We've got a K6 and a K8. So that's a 1937 Jubilee one and a 1968 style one.
Mm.
And the older one's got the push button A set in.
Right, Steve, another thing I noticed is that you have a railway, a small railway running around. So yes. What's that all about?
Right, okay, well, having built this shed with the intention of, having the second shed with the intention of just putting the model railway in it, I thought, actually, I've got so many post boxes, I need to get them undercover. So we now have a line of about 30 of the smaller wall-mounted post boxes, and then the model railway sits on top of it. But the railway itself has grown to the point where we can't actually get it all in that shed now.
Right.
So if you come, you'll be able to see the working middle scenic section of it. But we're aiming to show the whole thing, which is 40 foot by 20, at next year, so 2022's, autumn model railway exhibition at the East Anglian Railway Museum here at Chapel and Wakes Cone, because that's the only space big enough to take it.
Right. Steve, I'd like to thank you for joining us on the programme today.
Thanks.
Can you just reiterate once again, if people want to come down to Halstead on the open day, on this Saturday, the 11th of September, what they have to do and the time you're open?
Yeah, right. So it's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Mm.
Admission is free. There is limited parking outside. It's 109 Head Street, which is actually the Sudbury Road. There'll be big pink signs outside saying open today.
Right.
As part of the Heritage Open Day scheme. They give us all the banners, so you can't really miss it. But we would encourage people to visit the website if they can. So I'll say it again. It's cvphm.org.uk. And just drop me a line to let me know what time you're coming, just so we can manage the numbers. If you can't do that, it's not the end of the world. It won't be that busy. So do come along. You just might have to wait 5 or 6 minutes before you can come through. We can take guide dogs on leads. We can't take other dogs, unfortunately, because we have live chickens in the garden running free. And a very inquisitive ones as well. So if you do turn up, they'll come and have a sniff around your feet.
Okay. No, that's fine. I think there's something so typically British about a red pillar box. And everybody's nodding their heads here.
An icon of the British street.
Yeah. So thanks a lot for joining us. And I wish you all success with your open day on Saturday.
Thank you very much. And thanks for the invite again.
Thank you, Steve.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.